The FBI Boston Division announced today that its Joint Terrorism Task Force arrested Susan Ayani of Natick and Mark Sahadi of Malden for their alleged roles in connection with the Capitol riots on January 6th. In the last hour, both defendants appeared in court for their initial appearances. Since the events happened in D.C., the charges were filed in the U.S. Attorney's Office of the District of Columbia, but U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts, Andrew Lelling, has been working with the office in D.C. pursuing these two individuals. He joined us earlier today to talk about the cases, how jurisdiction works, and what other steps they're taking to hold people who participated in the insurrection accountable.
Nearly all of these cases are going to wind up being done out of the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. because that's the office that has jurisdiction. It's basically a criminal trespass case. We couldn't do that here, but like a lot of districts around the country, people who participated in that activity in D.C., they live in these other jurisdictions, like here in Massachusetts. So we've been investigating that for a while, and then as you pointed out, the complaints were unsealed this morning, and we made the arrests this morning.
So you've been in coordination with the office in D.C. in pursuing both Ayani and Sahadi, correct?
Yes. We identified these two targets a little while ago, and realizing that charges would almost certainly lie in D.C. itself and not here, we've been working with the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office. And the Justice Department in Washington has been trying to keep most of these cases in the D.C. office, which makes sense. I mean, that's where the crimes happened, and you want a certain level of consistency in how the cases are dealt with.
So that's a helpful distinction. You said the day after the insurrection that your office would prosecute people from Massachusetts who went there with the intent of participating in the violence. So does that mean that there might still nonetheless be other charges that your office could bring against these two or others who are being investigated from the Commonwealth in relation to the insurrection on the 6th?
Yes, that's correct. So you have it right. If we wanted to charge someone here in Massachusetts, we'd basically have to show that they left here with the intent to cross state lines to D.C. and engage in some kind of mayhem in D.C. And we don't have that with these two defendants, or at least not yet. The investigation is still active. As you've surely noticed, a lot of the activity these people engaged in, they cataloged themselves on social media. And so we have the tweets, we have the Facebook posts or the use of other social media platforms. We have the video and photographs from inside the Capitol building. And that has allowed us to piece together these cases. But what we don't see so far is pre-planning to breach the Capitol. We don't see that, at least not with regard to these two defendants.
And so that's really the distinction, right? For you to be able to demonstrate, I'm not a lawyer, I'm just trying to understand this, for you to be able to demonstrate intent to participate in the violence, you'd have to see a clear indication of people saying, I'm going to D.C., I'm going to storm the Capitol, I'm going to be part of an insurrection. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's actually a few ways to get at it. And so, for example, if somebody in Massachusetts bought gear like zip ties for securing people, or protective gear, bulletproof vests or masks or things that could be used as weapons, or things that showed they anticipated violence or property damage when they were there, that would be good evidence of pre-planning. Or if you found something on social media, or if you developed a cooperator, someone who they had spoken to and admitted their planning to. So there's a few ways to get at it, but it's not quite as easy as seeing someone on video inside the Capitol and charging them with criminal trespass. We can't do that. The D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office can do that. We need something more to develop a case that we can do here.
So I want to ask you, as events were unfolding on the 6th, here you are, your U.S. attorney in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That's in D.C. And at that time, we weren't sure, you know, if and whom from the Commonwealth was there. You're an appointee of the administration, the president of whom was calling on people to march down to the Capitol. What was going through your head as you watched the events unfold as a U.S. attorney?
I was appalled, absolutely appalled, because what you have here is a mob of people attacking a core democratic institution of the United States. And what I thought then and think now is what you are looking at in some ways is the culmination of increasing political polarization over the last few years, contending with the results of increasing political polarization has been one of the themes of my tenure in the cases that we have brought here, as that polarization leads people to commit federal crimes that they probably would not have otherwise committed. And you're seeing the culmination of that trend down in D.C., with the events at the Capitol. And so as I watched it on my computer monitor here in the office, I thought it was appalling, and I thought it was in some ways predictable.
And not to be voyeuristic, but did you find yourself thinking, wow, I'm going to have some work to do?
I did. It's funny. Initially, I did not think that. But then it slowly dawned on me over the course of that day that these people had come from across the United States. And once I realized that, it was clear to me that there would be cases related to this event probably throughout the country. There were enough people there, enough people at the Capitol that day, that this was probably going to impact the nation as a whole. And it wouldn't just be events confined to D.C.
So we're now, and in a minute, I want to talk to you about your tenure and what's next for you. But for now, I'm focused on the fact that we are in a transition. We're in a transition of administrations, which means at some point, and we talked about this a bit in November, we'll be in a transition for someone else into your role. How can the people of the Commonwealth feel confident that the diligence and the prosecution of investigation cases hands over smoothly on this issue as that transition happens?
Because it always goes smoothly. I mean, obviously, we've made this transition from one U.S. attorney to another, every 4 or 8 years, going back many, many years. And we have it down at this point. Mostly what happens is when the new person transitions in, all of the staff here is the same staff that was here during my tenure. I'm the only political appointee, so I'm the only one who is forced to leave. Everyone else stays, and they will brief up the new U.S. attorney on what the biggest cases are in the office and the most urgent investigations. Keep in mind that in the normal course, when I step down, there will be an acting U.S. attorney for some time, which is almost always the current deputy. So my deputy would step into my shoes and be the acting U.S. attorney until a new U.S. attorney is nominated and confirmed by the White House. And that usually takes a while. So for many months, you'll have a person running the office who has already been here and in an active supervisory role during my tenure, and that helps the transition. That helps ease the office from one U.S. attorney to the next. In the normal course, the new U.S. attorney would arrive and would be confirmed and sworn in sometime in the fall of this year. Now, it could be faster, especially with the Democrats controlling the Senate now, but that's usually what happens.
All right. And then before we talk more about the transition, one more question on the moment that we're in. So the FBI, the DOJ have hinted that the Capitol riot was planned, suggested it, have issued warnings about future planned incidents. Everyone's been on tenterhooks for the last couple of days, and now the inauguration is tomorrow. What are you on the watch for?
Well, I think that it's a little strong to say that the breach of the Capitol overall was planned. I think there are certain elements that showed up there geared up for violence, and then there are others who showed up there because they just wanted to protest sort of within legal limits. And then you had both mixed together once the Capitol was breached. But the FBI and DOJ are clearly worried about pre-planning now for events around the inauguration because I think that, and I think the FBI thinks, that what happened last week at the Capitol is perceived as a success by fringe groups on the right. And so maybe they're emboldened to try it again. Now, that said, one of the problems with domestic terrorism, which is a little different than when we were contending more with foreign terrorist concerns, is that when it comes to domestic terrorism, there is a tremendous amount of chatter that does not result in any activity. So separating the wheat from the chaff is very difficult. There is a flood of online, social media platform-based chatter and communications and comments and threats, the vast majority of which results in nothing. And so separating one from the other is very difficult. I think right now, at least as to Massachusetts, the FBI has no specific intel about planned mayhem of any kind within the Commonwealth. And I think we are cautiously anticipating that things will remain quiet here. As to what happens in D.C., I don't know. D.C. is obviously very locked down right now, and so I don't think much can happen there. But as for the four corners of my jurisdiction, we don't have anything so far that's causing us tremendous alarm, but obviously we have to be ready just in case it happens.
Well, that is all good news. Let's talk now about this eventual transition. The timeline remains uncertain, but that it's coming is clear. Is there any unfinished business you'd like to complete before you finish your term as U.S. attorney?
There is some unfinished business. And what's interesting is nearly all of it is on the civil rights side of our docket. And so we've been very active in civil rights enforcement over the last 3 or 4 years. And we have several big projects pending that I would have loved to have seen to fruition, but you know, my successor will have to deal with that. And so, for example, we have, with regard to the Springfield Police Department, the only police pattern and practice investigation, as we call it, that was opened during the Trump administration. That is nearing its natural end, meaning we're in negotiations with the police department in Springfield to reach a settlement to change the training and procedures that they use for their officers there. I would love to see that through. Holyoke Soldiers Home, we still have an active civil rights investigation of events at that home during the height of the shutdown. We probably lost about 75 or 80 veterans to COVID at the Holyoke Soldiers Home at its peak. The Massachusetts Department of Corrections, we have an investigation of neglect of the mentally ill in Massachusetts prison facilities and the misuse of restrictive housing. That's ongoing. So I was proud of all of these. I would love to see them through to the end, but again, they will have to await the next U.S. attorney for that.
So we don't know who your successor is going to be. We have heard that there is a short list. We've also heard that Suffolk County DA Rachel Rollins is on that short list. Whoever it is will be a choice of the Biden administration. Do you think that they will continue your lines of prosecution there and in other areas?
I think for the most part, yes. So when every administration comes in, certain priorities change. And that's the natural way of things. That's as it should be. So President Biden will have his own law enforcement priorities, and the efforts of his U.S. attorneys will reflect those priorities. I'm confident that these large civil rights investigations will continue. There'd be no reason why the new administration would change that. Other types of enforcement we do, I think, will continue with some adjustments. So the office, I'm sure, will continue to do gang enforcement or drug enforcement, especially in light of the opioid epidemic. But they'll calibrate it some more to reflect their philosophical outlook. And again, that's as it should be. So I think most of the work of the office will simply continue, and you'll see some changes around the edges.
All right, so last question, and it's the obvious one, which is what's next for you? I know you recently told the Boston Herald that you might consider running for elected office. Have you given that more thought? Do you have an office in mind?
I don't have an office in mind. It's more that I wouldn't foreclose it. For the time being, I'm going to be in the private sector. I'll probably go to a law firm. I have no position or vacancy in mind that I would run for. It just seems to me that in the future, I've enjoyed this kind of public service work. I could see myself back in public service in the executive branch, or I could see myself running for office at some point. But that would be long from now, I think. I think right now, after 20 years at the Justice Department, I'm going to step away from that, go back to the private sector for a while, and then we'll see what happens then.
All right. That is U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts, Andrew Lelling. And I hope as your plans firm up, maybe we can have you back one more time for a last conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.